The Northwest is dry this year, and each corner of the region is trying to address water needs as best they can. One area that's experienced more than their fair share of dry years is the Klamath Basin in southwestern Oregon. And like everyone else, they're facing a potentially challenging summer this year. But it's not all bad or difficult news for the Klamath region. The Klamath Drainage District has a pair of projects aimed at providing water to the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. I recently had a chance to sit down with KDD manager Scott White to talk about the Lower Klamath Reconnection Project.
The goal is really, we're looking for long-term sustainability relative to water security. One way of doing that is working with our partners, both in ag, both from a water user perspective, as well as an ecosystem perspective. You know, we in the Klamath Drainage District, we sit right adjacent to the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge, which is the first wildlife refuge dedicated to migratory waterfowl. That's really important when you sit in the heart of the Pacific Flyway. And my landowners in my district, that's something near and dear to them. They grew up with those birds flying around. And just a few years ago, back when that refuge went completely dry and they cut off hunting for the first time in history out there, my board, to their credit, said, we got to do something different. This is not working. And so we started talking to our refuge neighbors. We started talking to bird advocates. We started talking to ecosystem folks. We started talking to fisheries folks, considering that the dams were coming out. And we started putting ideas on the table. And one idea that came forth is something that was kind of tinkering around in my mind for probably a near a decade, is what would it look like if we just opened up our canal? It's called the 80 Canal. It is the only way of delivering fresh water from the Klamath River to the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. But if we were to open that up permanently and just allow that reconnection, if you will, to occur, what does that look like? How can we navigate that? What does that look like legally? What does it look like policy-wise? What does it look like from an ecosystem, natural resource-wise? We started trying to answer all of those questions, and we just got done with phase one of planning. So we're at 30% design with four different alternatives of how to reconnect, what that could look like. It's starting to take on a life of its own, if you will, or have its own heartbeat, to the point that it's gaining a lot of attention, a lot of excitement around it. And I think it's something that people are starting to see as something that we're seeing winds across the board. We're seeing groundwater recharge. We're seeing microclimate impacts. We're seeing, obviously, the benefits to birds. Last year, you know, was like the first year that we had the dams out. We had salmon wanting to go down there. We had salmon going down to the refuge. Some will say that that's not, they don't belong down on the refuge. Some say it's incredible rearing habitat. So I'm not a fisheries guy. I don't know, but I know we're at a point of, we want to learn about it. We want to make sure we're doing the right thing where we can do the right thing. And from my perspective, so long as it doesn't impact my landowners in any way, provides water security on the landscape, provides security for our birding habitat, provides security for our fisheries habitat, as well as any other ecosystem benefits that I can't even think of at this point, why wouldn't we do something like that? We've been living amongst this, you know, in the heart of the Pacific Flyway, amongst a fishery with endangered species, with threatened species, with species that are valuable to neighboring tribes. We could do a better job of managing our natural resources to where we all win, to where we all can live in harmony with each other and the things that are important to us. So that's how we're looking at this project. And you know, it's been an interesting ride, I'll say, so far, in bringing different parties together that typically wouldn't come together and rally around a project. So it's been really interesting to get those different perspectives, which I think are absolutely invaluable for building this project into what it is.
So, Scott, what does the future look like when it comes to the Lower Klamath Reconnection Project? What are the next steps?
Well, right now, the 30% design report is getting finalized. Once that is finalized, we are going to go out and start seeking funding for, well, I shouldn't say that. We already have started seeking funding, but once we have a report in hand, you know, we can start handing that out and saying, hey, look at this. This is what we need funding for, is to continue this work. So that work includes going up to 60% design. So taking these alternatives and hopefully identifying one that is really kind of rising to the top as the premier alternative that works for all parties, that seems most feasible. And that's largely the next phase. I don't know which alternative that will be at that point. I know which one I have a preference of. But others may not. And my preference may not even be feasible, whether it be financially or even elevation wise, you know, geographically. So that's really the next step, is to go into phase two, which is 60% design. And then, of course, phase three would be 90% design and then implementation. One thing that's really interesting that I thought we would never be in this situation, you know, is when fish started coming back, we were thinking about fish screens a lot and how do we keep fish out. And now that we've got fish that, you know, this being potentially the only connection between the river and Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge, and whether it be suckers, which are endangered, or threatened coho, or even Chinook that are important to our neighboring tribes, we may not necessarily want to keep fish out of the system. So one way that we as a district, and this is really interesting from an ag perspective, because my entire career, it's always been keep fish out, keep fish out. Well, now we're saying that might not be the best thing, is to keep fish out. We have a Klamath River where the water quality gets horrible for a certain time of year. And we actually have folks that are saying, you know, we believe some of these endangered suckers use your canals as a refuge away from that bad water quality. So now we're rethinking the fish screening approach to, is there something we can do to go ahead and allow the fish to come in, but keep them from going places that we don't want them to go? And those places obviously being our fields, right? And so we've actually transitioned from one big fish screen out on the 80 canal all the way down to, like, what does it look like for us to do smaller fish screens on these turnouts where we definitely don't want fish, but we may want fish in these canals. We certainly don't want to kill these fish. We don't want these fish to have to be stranded out in a Klamath River where they can't breathe. So we've transitioned over to putting those fish screens, or thinking about putting those fish screens in the canal rather than screening off the entire canal, which is a new way of thinking about this, at least from my perspective. And, you know, it's a bit scary, to be honest with you, Glenn, when you think about inviting fish in, if I can put it in that way. You know, we've always been, no, fish are bad. You know, you see dead fish, you know, you get a black eye in the media, you know? And we definitely don't want that, but we know one thing. We also don't want to be party to killing the fish if the Klamath River is one of those sources that's killing the fish. We don't want to be a part of that and force them to have to stay out there. So it's kind of a new and different way of thinking about it, which is scary, exciting, all at the same time.
Once again, Klamath Drainage District Manager Scott White.